I really hope I was supposed to do 17. I think you said 16, but I'm glad it was supposed to be that. Yeah, okay. We're on the right page then and on the right chapter. So that's always good. But it's good to see everyone here out at this first hour. I appreciate everyone coming to be here today. And it's good to be back with you again today as well. This chapter continues to highlight the family troubles that David had. In this chapter, his own son is plotting to kill him. And we have a little chapter summary here that I prepared for you to see. David's son Absalom has plotted to kill his father and become the king of Israel. Now, when I first read over this in preparation to bring a lesson for this chapter, I was somewhat surprised and shocked to know that this Absalom, this son that David loved so dearly, was yet willing to kill his father. And I thought, surely not. But as I read over it and I read over it again, I thought, well, that's exactly what this is talking about. He's planning to kill his own father. And so that is what's going on in this particular chapter. He receives counsel concerning this desire to do this from two different people, Ahithophel and Hushai. And Ahithophel's counsel is rejected, and Hushai's counsel is accepted in this chapter. And that covers most of the chapter, just in a brief summary. Now, David is being plotted against by Absalom, but he survives this attempt. Absalom's attempt on David turns out to be a futile one, and it fails mainly because this second counselor, Hushai, is like a double agent, we would say. He pretends to help Absalom, but in reality, he turns around and warns David of the impending threat that Absalom posed. So in this lesson, I'd first like to briefly discuss some of the events of this chapter and then examine some of the lessons that we could learn from the things that these people did. Ahithophel wants Absalom to pick out about 12,000 men and attack David's army. That's his counsel. We see that in the opening parts of this 2 Samuel 17. And as this chapter opens, Ahithophel is giving Absalom his counsel, his advice concerning some kind of a military strategy against David. And he suggests that the soldiers that are with David would run off and they'd be able to kill David and no harm would come to the others with David. Now keep in mind, the reason he does this is he doesn't want to lose these good soldiers. He doesn't want to come in there and just slaughter the whole bunch of them because he knows he's going to need these soldiers to defend his own. If he becomes king, he's going to need these guys. They are aware of how to fight a battle, and they're prepared and conditioned, and he knows he doesn't want them to go. And Ahithophel knows that as well, so he makes this suggestion. Well, we don't want to kill out these soldiers. We just want to kill David. And so that's his plan. And earlier, though, we also keep in mind in 2 Samuel 15 and verse 31, David had prayed saying, "O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." And we see that this prayer was answered in verse 14 of 2 Samuel. It said, "And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel." And notice the side note on that. It says, "For the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom." So that prayer was answered. We see that prayer back in chapter 15, verse 31 that we're talking about, that David prayed, it's answered, and we're told that it's answered in this verse 14. But what was the other counsel then? Hushai's counsel is he advises Absalom to take a different approach. He said, "Well, we don't want to do this." He said he suggests that they surround David's army with the entire host of the army of Israel. Now, he also realizes, kind of as a back of his mind side strategy, that takes time. It's going to take a while if he does this. If Absalom decides to surround David's army with a whole host of Israel, it's going to take a little time to gather the whole host of Israel. So that could be part of the strategy. He doesn't think that David's men would run away, and he's probably right about that. But he reminds Absalom that David's men are battle-hardened and would die before they would abandon David. And that also is, chances are, very correct. Yeah, very correct, because they had been through several battles. They loved David. They would have fought to the death before they allowed him to be taken and killed. Now, he also has a strategy here. He flatters Absalom, and he appeals to his ego, and he advises Absalom to lead this army of Israel against the army that David has put together. Now, Ahithophel's counsel, he was going to be the one. Ahithophel says, I'll lead him. I'll lead this army against David's army. But by contrast, Hushai is going to flatter Absalom. And he's like, oh, you can lead him. You're the guy to take him into battle and win this great victory and so on. And he knows that that's going to appeal to Absalom. But also, Hushai counsels in verse 13 that if David were to take refuge in a city, a large army of Israel could bring ropes to that city and draw it into the river. We see that in verse 13. Now, keep in mind, one of the things they would do when they would surround the city and attack it is their strategy would take these big hooks with ropes on them, and they'd throw them and hook onto the wall and yank the walls down, as in just tearing them down, brick by brick and so on and so forth, till the walls were just flat. And that was a method that they sometimes used to do that. They'd throw a rope up there with a hook, and they'd pull that down brick by brick so that the army invaders could go in and take it and take the city. So that's what he's meaning in this verse 13, that they would bring ropes to the city and draw it into the river. But Hushai turns out to be secretly for David, as we mentioned. He instructs the priests, Zadok and Abiathar, that are named in verse 15, to go and warn David, and they send their sons to do so. Verse 16 reveals a message, the warning that they are to give David. He says, now, therefore, send quickly and tell David, saying, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him. And it becomes evident that these priests give the message to Jonathan and Ahimaaz and instruct them to warn David. And these were the young sons of the priest Zadok. Well, Zadok's son made their way toward David, and they enlisted the help of, in verse 17, she's called a wench. Now, in our way of thinking, this would not be a very flattering term to call a girl a wench. But really, for this time period, it's just basically a servant. It really isn't like what we would think of as a prostitute. But she's just basically a little servant girl, and she is asked to help these boys. And yet their plans had to be changed because another little boy spotted them, a lad, and they had to resort to hiding in a well until the coast was clear. It was probably not a well as we think of. It's probably what we would call a cistern that may have been dry, and she just let him down inside of that. But they eventually managed to reach David, and they deliver the message that they had been given. And they told him in verse 21, arise and pass quickly over, let's see if I've got that, yeah. Arise and pass quickly over the water, for thus hath Ahithophel counseled against you. So that's the message they were to deliver. And this, there was still a chance they knew that Absalom would reject the advice of Hushai and follow the advice of Ahithophel and attack quickly. And so they wanted to waste no time in getting David to a place where he would have a more advantage. So David follows the warning from Hushai, and verse 22 tells us, then David arose and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan. By the morning light, there lacked not one of them that was not gone over Jordan. So this is counsel that was good. It was followed. David arranges himself and his army in a better position to defend an attack that Absalom might send against him. So yet, one of the things we find out in this chapter 2, the first counselor, Ahithophel, was ashamed. that his counsel was not followed. So much so that he went to his home, put his things in order, and hanged himself. He committed suicide because he was so ashamed that his counsel was not followed. Now, we're not specifically told why his counsel wasn't, why he was so ashamed. Some have thought, well, it may have been that he thought one side or the other was going to kill him anyway, and he may have thought his career was over. May have been so distraught, so depressed, whatever, that he decided to take his own life. We're not really sure why he did this, but we are told that he did, because he was so upset that that Absalom did not take his advice and took the advice of the other counselor. And also then we find later on in this chapter, David and his army came to Mahanaim, and the people of that city were favorable to them, and they gathered a large amount of provisions and took them to David. Now the reason for their generosity is given in verse 29. It says the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So we see in the closing statements of this chapter that these people recognized the need. They saw a need that David and his army had, and they knew they had the provisions to meet that need, so they did. And so that was a good thing and a favorable thing that they did to help David. I was reminded of a saying found credited to Napoleon Bonaparte. He's credited with the saying, an army marches on its stomach. And there's a lot of truth in that, especially for that time without the technology we have today. So they were recognizing that an army marches on its stomach, and they took provisions and saw to it that they had what they needed to continue on. But that is where the chapter closes out for the part that we are studying this morning. But then what lessons can we learn from this? Well, there's many lessons that we could learn from this particular chapter. I just want to touch on a few of them this morning. And one of them is the importance of seeking out wise counsel. Now, Absalom sought out counsel, but as it turned out, the counsel was not in his favor, it was in David's favor. But Solomon encourages us to seek wise counsel in different places. He says in Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. Also, we find in Proverbs 19 and verse 20, it tells us, hear counsel and receive instruction that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. So it is important to listen and follow wise counsel and not foolish counsel. And another Bible example of someone who followed the wrong counsel that we can learn from, and I thought I would just inject this into it by way of studying the lesson before us about seeking wise counsel, was an example of the son of Solomon, Rehoboam. Now, Rehoboam became king of Israel after Solomon passed, according to 1 Kings chapter 12 and verse 1. Now, he sought the advice of how he should conduct his kingdom and the manner in which he should rule. And he listened to old men, quote unquote, verse 6, 1 Kings 12, and they advised him to place an easier burden on the people. And then Rehoboam in verse 7 asked the young men, and verse 10, their counsel, they advised the king to make the burden on the people much harder. We see that the young men were in verse 10, and the recording it talks about their counsel in verse 11 of 1 Kings 12. So instead of following the old men's advice, he follows the young men's advice, likely his peers. And Rehoboam listened to them instead, and he told the people of Israel, and we have it in 1 Kings 12 and verse 14, his decision about how he would rule. He says, my father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father also chastened you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So following this bad advice, though, Rehoboam's kingdom split. And Rehoboam, the tribes of Judah and Benjamin continued to follow Rehoboam, but the other 10 tribes followed Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. So a once strong nation of Israel became divided because of bad advice. And so that's just another example of how important it is to follow good counsel and to seek out good counsel. And of course, as we know, the best counsel you can find is in the Bible. And Titus talks about that in Titus chapter 2. Now we have in Titus chapter 1, we have them talking about the importance of elders. He tells them in chapter 1, verse 5, to ordain elders in every city. And he talks about, goes on to list some qualifications of elders. But in chapter 2, the tone changes a little bit, and he changes his address to specifically elders to just old men in general and old women and young men and young women. So notice Titus chapter 2, and it's kind of a lengthy reading, but I think it makes a good point concerning counsel and the importance of counsel and the kind of counsel that we get from the Bible and people who are guided by the Bible. Titus chapter 2 and verse 1 begins, and it says this, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine." Now, how do we get that doctrine? The Bible. So that's what we're talking about here. He goes on to say in Titus chapter 2 and verse 2 and following, he said that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith and charity and patience. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. That they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. He goes on then and talks about young men. He says, "Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, and sincerity." So we see here there's good advice, and that good advice is coming from, as it talked about in verse 1, sound doctrine, and the sound doctrine is from the Word of God. So we need to seek good counsel, and that's one of the lessons that we can learn from this particular chapter, is how important it is to seek out good counsel. Another thing that we can learn is the importance of never giving up. We have a bad example here. The man who gave Absalom the bad counsel was Ahithophel, and when his advice was not followed, he became so upset that he committed suicide. He gave up. He just gave up. He should have learned from his mistake and went on to be able to give good counsel. But instead, he gives up. He just says, "It's not worth it. I'm too upset." For whatever reason, he gives up and commits suicide. Now, as we've seen in this lesson, the counsel of Hushai was followed instead of the counsel of Ahithophel, and God answered David's prayer in this matter. But we recognize, too, that he did not have to commit suicide. This Ahithophel, that was his choice. It wasn't anything that God provoked him to do and wanted him to do. But we recognize, in considering a lesson we can learn for us, Romans 3 and verse 23 tells us, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." We all make mistakes, and none of us are perfect, and we're going to fall flat sometimes and recognize that we have failed, and yet we should never give up. Now, this Ahithophel, he gave up, committed suicide, but we should learn from his mistake and not give up. We should not give up, but learn from the mistakes we make, as he should have done, and go on and do better in the future than what we have in the past. Now, trials are something that's common to all of us. And yet, we see the advice in Hebrews 12 and verse 11. It tells us this, "Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous but grievous." And we understand that part. We don't like it when troubles come our way and when we're struggling down in that valley. But yet, let's finish the verse and continue to see what it says. "Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby." So this is the part, that latter part is what Ahithophel should have taken advantage of. He should have said, "Well, look, it's going to get better. I'm going to learn from this and I'm going to go forward." But he didn't. He just gave up. He just committed suicide. And we should not do anything of that nature. Job went through a lot of trials. He's a good example for us. He had a lot of trials. He had a lot of grief, but he became stronger because of what he went through. And he's a good example for us to follow in dealing with the trials that come our way. Another thing that we can learn is the power of prayer. As we talked about earlier, David prayed to God in 2 Samuel 15, 31, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. And we've seen in this lesson also how that God answered that prayer. And we don't know how he did it necessarily. There was just this providential work to where he caused Absalom to reject the counsel of Ahithophel and accept the counsel of Hushai. Now, brethren, God is still powerful today. He was powerful then. He answered prayer then. And brethren, he still answers prayer today. And that's a lesson for us that we can learn today. James chapter 5 talks about that the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Also, Jesus said, and notice this verse in Matthew 21 and verse 22, and all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. That is pretty direct. That's pretty straightforward. And it's certainly true that we can count on that. Now, Jesus gives an illustration in Matthew chapter 7 concerning children and parents. He says, first of all, in Matthew 7 and verse 7, ask and it shall be given you, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. Then gives an illustration concerning the fact that we as parents, well, we know how to give good things to our children, and God will get, and God being greater than us is going to give even better things and wiser things in a wiser fashion to us as his children. Now, you know, we may ask for a prayer, we may pray a prayer and we may ask for something, and yet God knows that's not the best thing. That's not, or maybe he realizes that we need to wait a little while until we're ready to receive the answer to that prayer. You know, when a Christian prays a prayer, it's always answered. Sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes the answer is wait a while. But we should never think our prayer was not answered, because it is. If we're a Christian, we can count on that fact that God will answer this prayer. Sometimes the answer is no. But we need to realize that and consider that. And notice what he tells in a little bit further on in verse 11. He says, if ye then being evil know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? Now keep in mind too what we talked about earlier in Matthew 21 verse 22. And all things whatsoever ye ask in prayer, believing ye shall receive. That's true if it's a good thing. And he qualifies that, and he's talked about that earlier, telling us that he's going to give us what's best. We are his children. He's not going to give us something that hurts us, really. If it may cause a trial, and then we might be better because of that trial. We see this in the passage we read in Hebrews. But the idea is we are going to get an answer, and it'll be something that's good for us. Whether it seems like it or not, sometimes we may not understand. But nevertheless, if we're Christians, we can have that confidence. And we can know that we will have our prayers answered. And another example of this kind of thing is we see in Acts chapter 12, Herod the king killed James, the brother of John, and he put Peter in prison. And Acts 12 and verse 12 tells us about the house of Mary, the mother of John. And it says, concerning the Christians that were there, many were gathered together praying. We see this in Acts 12 and verse 12. Now, they were praying for Peter, and then amazingly, Peter comes to the door. And verse 16 says, Peter continued knocking, and when they had opened the door, they saw him, and they were astonished. They were surprised, but God answered their prayer. He did so in a way that was a miraculous fashion, but nevertheless, it was an answered prayer. And they were astonished that their prayer was answered. But brethren, our prayers get answered today. Maybe not in a miraculous way, and not in a miraculous way, in a providential way. But nevertheless, we still should count on the power of prayer. Prayer is a powerful thing. And I think all too often we underestimate it. So let me encourage you today to take a lesson from this and learn. One of the lessons we can learn is the power of prayer. So there are many lessons that we could go on if time would permit, but these should help us to be encouraged, to listen to good counsel, to never give up, and learn from our mistakes instead of giving up, and utilize the power of prayer in our lives as Christians. But it may be today that you're not a Christian, and we want to give you this opportunity to become one in faith, repentance, confession, and baptism for the forgiveness of sins, being obedient to the gospel. And if you've once been obedient and have strayed away, we want to give you an opportunity to come back. If you'll let your needs be known as we stand and sing the encouragement song.